Steve Dale's Other World on WGN. Good afternoon. I have Alderman Brian Hopkins, Second Ward, on the phone now. Today is indeed a day of mourning in the city of Chicago, Alderman. So I express my condolences, and I suspect you feel the same.
Yeah, thank you, Steve. This is a sad day for all of Chicago. It's a loss for all of us. I've been on the phone most of the day today with police officers, some who knew the police officers involved, some who didn't. But whether they were friends or acquaintances or just someone that you knew of by reputation, we all feel this. We all feel this loss as if it were a member of our family, because in a way it really was. You know, it's the family of people who are involved in public service in the city of Chicago. And it's just devastating. And it really is something that, you know, you feel in a way that words fail in the ability to express.
I need to say this. Her name is Ella French, 29 years old is all. And our Mayor Lori Lightfoot, broke up during her comments, and I understand it. And talked about how we don't often enough give the police enough credit, say thank you enough. I think that's something that we need to do, which would be turning the tides, I know, completely from what they were, from people who want to abolish the police. My view is we have good and bad in any industry, anywhere. Police are no exception, whether they be teachers, public officials, radio hosts. It doesn't matter. There's good and bad everywhere. But most people are good, and most people want to be police officers for all the right reasons, and they are. And in my view, they're heroes. She in particular at this very moment, but she lost her life in the process.
You know, well, every profession has standards, and every profession has things that you are expected to adhere to, whether it's a code or, sort of unwritten rules. I want to take this opportunity right now just quickly. I'm going to read from the code of ethics that every Chicago police officer, when they graduate from the academy, raises their hand and takes an oath. And this is just one sentence. As a law enforcement officer, my fundamental duty is to serve my fellow citizens, to safeguard lives and property, protect the innocent against deception, the weak against oppression, and the peaceful against violence and disorder. They take an oath. And in this case, it cost one police officer her life, and another one is fighting for his life right now.
Yeah,
because their job involves upholding that oath and putting themselves in occasionally mortal danger in the course of doing that. And we all just need to take that to heart on a day like today.
And often to protect us. When something bad happens, who are you going to call? As you know, you call the police. Of course you do.
Right.
And you and I had planned, and we will right now, talk about increasing violence in the city of Chicago. And are you okay with the extent? I mean, what's being done about it? Is that enough in your view?
Yeah, you know, that was the purpose of this interview when we scheduled it days before, we knew it was about to happen. We had no way of knowing that, of course. But, the threat of violence boiling over at any given moment is omnipresent right now in our city. And that's part of the problem. And that was really the original topic that we were going to talk about in this interview. But it's impossible to do that now and not put it in the context of what just happened. So, of course, there's a fundamental shift in society right now. It's hard to measure, and we have arguments over statistics all the time. There are actually people who insist crime is down right now, and they'll say that and show some factual data to try and back it up. Other voices will say, no, there's something happening right now, and we're seeing an increase in certain types of violent crimes in certain types of areas that's indicative of social forces shifting. And doing so in a way that threatens everybody if it continues. It really threatens the very fabric of society. We can't live together as a people like this if we allow a murder epidemic to continue at the volume that it's continuing right now. So we're having this argument. We're having this debate. Passions and feelings seem to dominate it. But unless we find answers, and right now the answers seem as elusive as ever, I just don't know how we keep it together as a society. We're definitely going in a direction that just leads to chaos and destruction and disorder, which is a rather mild word, but it's right there in that code of ethics that I just talked about. And no one can convince me that we are not seeing unprecedented levels of disorder in our society that we've seen for the last couple of years. I witnessed it. It happened in my ward. It happened in my neighborhood. Things I've never seen happen before have happened repeatedly. And law enforcement professionals feel it. They're feeling it today. One of their own has been taken from us by it. And respect for the police is arguably at an all-time low. And it manifests itself in a variety of different ways. And tragically, you won't see a more dramatic example of that than what just happened.
You used the word epidemic when you talked about violence. And no matter what the data is or is not, perception matters more than anything else. And if people feel unsafe, doesn't that dramatically impact the economy of our city and the well-being of those who live in the city?
It certainly does. In fact, we look for indications of that in the wake of the pandemic and the economic devastation that wrought, and then the continuing fear of crime downtown. It's sometimes hard to read the tea leaves and interpret the data in a way that leads to any sort of definitive declarative statement. There are actually things you could look at right now that would give you hope, where you would say, well, things are bad, but they're not as bad as they could be. We still have a functioning downtown to some degree. It's not what it once was, but there's signs of life. There's increasing pedestrian counts on Michigan Avenue. The stores have reopened. The restaurants have reopened. So I'm not giving up. I'm despondent today. My heart is broken. But I'm a Chicagoan. I'm a lifelong Chicagoan. I'm not going anywhere. I'm going to stay here and fight for this city. I'm going to fight for the society that we used to have. I'm going to fight for neighborhoods that can be made safe once again. And there's indications in the data that it's a fight we can win. So I guess that's the positive message we should take away right now is, as we deal with the grief from, two officers who were attacked last night, and we deal with the fear from what could be a very significant fourth wave of the coronavirus, there's still reason to try and hold it together, and there's still reasons to hope and think we can turn a corner on all of this. We really have no choice, We can't give up. We have to stay and fight for what we know is right.
Our police superintendent, our mayor, many aldermen have pointed fingers at Kim Fox and her office as the state's attorney for not prosecuting to the extent that she can, or just not prosecuting. How do you feel?
Yeah, I think State Attorney Fox has in many ways, and you could argue in some ways maybe not fair, has sort of been made a symbol of a larger debate in society right now about decriminalization, decarceration, defund the police. For the record, I am ardently against all of those things, and I think it's folly to continue in the path that we've gone, which is to limit law enforcement and allow criminals unfettered freedom to continue to commit crimes. That's insanity in my mind, but that doesn't mean we shouldn't be having a healthy debate about how we do it. That doesn't mean there aren't improvements that can be made. That doesn't mean we don't have a fundamentally unjust society in so many ways. We do. Absolutely. We're arguing about what the solution should be. And I think there's some very dangerous, reckless, and foolish solutions that have gained ground in recent years. And we're seeing that manifest itself in increasing crime rates and repeated instances where offenders who certainly have done something horrible to society do not seem to experience any negative consequences of that. And people intuitively know that when there's no negative consequences, behavior is repeated. So that's the debate we're having right now. It goes so far beyond one individual, goes so far beyond just one office. And to just point fingers which a lot of people are tempted to do, really isn't going to get us any closer to the solutions that we're seeking.
Why does it go beyond one office if she and her office are the ones that would be prosecuting?
Well, because she's been elected to that office by the people, and she's been reelected to that office by the people. And I've known her for many years. I respect her in a lot of ways as a public servant. Before she was a state's attorney, she served side by side with me in Cook County government. She's an honest woman, and she is honest about her intentions. She ran for this office telling us what she was going to do, and the voters agreed with her. At least the majority of the voters agreed with her twice now. So, again,
right,
that's my point about the larger debate. It isn't just her. It's an argument we're having amongst ourselves as a society. We are so divided right now. And we are, in many ways, we're confused because the nature of this argument that we're having is contradictory. We can't even agree on the facts that we're using to support our various arguments. So it's a very dark time in public life when you have things like what we're dealing with. And certainly there's life or death consequences to it, as we saw, you know, once again, dramatically today.
Yeah.
But again, to scapegoat one office holder, I don't believe is really going to ultimately get us where we need to be to solve some of these social problems.
I know you have some strong feelings about the pandemic and what Chicago could be doing that we're not doing. And I want to talk about public safety on public transportation. We'll do all of that with Alderman Brian Hopkins next on WGN. WGN, Steve Dale's Other World. Alderman Brian Hopkins, Second Ward, is on the telephone. Second Ward, that is near North Michigan Avenue, Streeterville area. Lots of people come downtown via public transportation. If we're talking the CTA, either the Red Line or the Brown Line, primary modes, Blue Line also to get you downtown, Green Line, I think I've got them all there. All the colors that matter. I'll tell you, I've taken the train a couple times, Alderman, and mostly people without masks. I walked on to, me and my wife, more than one car where it was filled with homeless people, and it was not a comfortable feeling, and it did have a certain odor about it. I'm just telling the truth there. And the truth is that if people have to deal with this, and that's their mode of transportation to get downtown, and they feel, okay, I could drive if they have a car. I could drive, but I'm not paying for that parking. And indeed, the parking can be very expensive. Does this all encourage people to go downtown?
Yeah, we have a real problem right now. There's no question about it. Trying to recover our public transit system, it's absolutely essential whether or not we ever return to a traditional 9-to-5 downtown work environment with a commute or not. There's a lot of debate about whether that will ever really happen. I personally don't think it ever will again. But that isn't to say that we don't need a functioning, safe, comfortable public transportation system in our city. That is going to be one of the main keys to urban living in the future. As we shift away from a car owner society where everyone must own a personal vehicle or you're trapped and you can't get around, public transportation is in many ways the future of sustainable urban living. And right now we're hearing stories anecdotally, just what you said, about people who are getting on an L train for the first time in quite a while, and they're kind of shocked at what they see. And I know the CTA is doing everything that they can from a workforce standpoint. They clean those trains constantly. They just can't keep up with the people who are messing them up. And as far as, you know, a potential spread of COVID, absolutely. Those were some of the most frightening images that I saw during Lollapalooza weekend.
Yes.
Were the packed L cars. I think they're much more likely to be spreading COVID in that combined indoor space when those doors are closing, and they close and everybody's shoulder to shoulder. It only takes one person unmasked who is at their peak infectivity on that rail car to infect pretty much at least half of the rail car, if not almost all of the rail car. And that was less likely to happen in an outdoor environment at the concert venue when the breeze is blowing and, you know, diluting the air. That isn't the case in an indoor environment like a CTA L car. So we have to do a better job generally speaking, in indoor air quality on all confined spaces, airplanes, trains, buses, school classrooms especially, we have simply not given enough attention to indoor air hygiene and how that can be an effective tool at reducing the amount of virus that's in the air and reducing the amount of spread of COVID.
All right. To that extent, that leads us right to this. New York City and Mayor de Blasio recently said just a couple days ago that, you know what, you want to go into a bar, into a restaurant, even a place where you get your hair cut, a health club. I mean, a whole list of places. You need to demonstrate that you have been vaccinated and not necessarily tested within, 72 hours? What does that tell you? Well, 72 hours you were okay, but how about now? But you need to be vaccinated. How do you feel about that? Do you think Chicago ought to do the same?
I do, especially right now as we are very much, we're off the starting blocks on the fourth wave right now. It's here. It's begun. We've said historically all along that when we exceed 200 new cases a day in Chicago, that's the benchmark for when we're in another wave. We're going to pass 300 cases a day this week. In fact, we may have already passed it today. We were at 290 the last I checked. So we're going to go past 300. Positivity rapidly approaching 5%. Again, that's another benchmark above that. It's absolutely uncontrolled spread. And we're at 4 and some change right now and rising rapidly. So it's inevitable. There's nothing we can do right now to stop what is already in progress. It's here. It's happening. It's going to get very, very bad in the coming weeks. A lot of unvaccinated people are going to get severely ill, and many will die in Chicago. Among vaccinated people, I think we're going to see a lot of infections because Delta has proven its ability to defeat the vaccine and to infect you. Fortunately, the vaccine is very effective at keeping you from getting severely ill and keeping you from dying. So it's a very low risk for a vaccinated person that they're going to wind up in a hospital, but they still are likely to get COVID if they're exposed to it. And we also know that a vaccinated person can spread COVID while they're infectious. We don't know to what extent. There's a lot of controversy about how infectious they are. But we seem to have settled the question that, yes, a vaccinated person can make another person sick when they're infected by COVID.
Alderman, I have less than a minute left here. Are you going to bring this up at City Council? How do your colleagues, to your ability to know, feel about this?
Yeah, I mean, I've been pushing our health messaging, as I am not in the healthcare industry, but I am in the communication industry as an elected official with a platform. And I've been pushing so hard on including the importance of indoor air quality, ventilation and filtration, and masks as well. Those are the three things that are going to get us out of this. And they're all three equally important: vaccination, indoor air quality, and masks. And by the way, the type of mask has never been more important. It has to be a tight-fitting mask. If you've got a loose-fitting mask, it's almost like having no mask at all, and it's not going to protect you from airborne COVID virus. So make sure your mask is tight, and it covers your nose, and it covers your mouth. Even if you're vaccinated, having that mask on is going to give you at least a fighting chance against getting infected if you happen to be in a room where there is high concentrations of the airborne virus.
Always good to talk to you, Alderman. I always, always wish I had more time with you. Thank you very much for the time you've given us.
Thank you, Steve. Be well.